reaching out, touching me, touching you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Welcome back to the Golf Shop. Mark Greenhouse,
so
Mike Frascina.
So good.
This segment is brought to you by Charlotte Comfort Systems, where your comfort is their business. Call 704-366-1661 or log on to charlottecomfortsystems.com. And don't forget, Charlotte Comfort Systems has a best price guarantee. And I'm sure as a Yankees fan, our next guest, Dan Maselli, LPGA official, really enjoyed that. Welcome in, Dan.
Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, as you guys were playing that song, I'm going, you kidding me? You're going to play with a Yankee fan on the phone?
Absolutely, Dan. Absolutely.
Obviously, there are no holes barred with you two, obviously.
No, there
never.
Nothing. And I was explaining to them during commercial how much I like you and I respect you and you're Italian, but I can't get over the Yankee thing. I just can't.
That's all right. They either love us or they hate us. That's the way it is.
Everybody has their faults, right?
Yep, you're cross to bear.
All right. Exactly. So, you know, we want to kind of set this up because last year you were the official that was following the group in the Solheim Cup that had the whole debacle with Suzanne Pedersen and Allison Lee, and the putt was conceded or was it not conceded, and that whole fiasco, and we talked about it with you after that. Now we have another fiasco with the USGA and Dustin Johnson on the fifth hole, a ball moving, not penalized, later on penalized, sort of, but not really until the end of the round. Man, kind of interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, you have to look at what evidence they had available to them at each one of those junctures. And the very first the official that was on the scene, the referee walking with the group, you know, he asked Dustin, had he grounded his club, which Dustin had interpreted as, had he addressed the ball? And, of course, you don't address the ball until you place the club either in front of or behind the ball. And although he had grounded the club to the side, in Dustin's mind, he had not addressed the ball. So he answered no. So the official, thinking, well, he never grounded his club, it's more likely than not that he did not cause the ball to move. So therefore, he said, okay, no penalty. We'll play it from the new location. As they saw the video on television, and as you know, rules officials are required to look into every situation that comes before them. So they saw the video, and they looked at how proximate he was to the ball, and when the ball moved, the timing of it was like 1.2 seconds after he had grounded the club a second time, and they just felt that under the rules of golf, under Rule 18.2, that he had more likely than not caused that ball to move, and it was because of the extra evidence they got from the video. And so that's when they approached him on 12 to tell him of that, of the possible pending penalty. Now, they all admit now that that was a mistake, that they should have just penalized him at that time and told him, you've incurred a one-stroke penalty. If you want to discuss it when we're done and look at the video, we'll be happy to do that with you. It can always be rescinded, but at this point, we want you to operate under the understanding that you have incurred a one-stroke penalty. I think a lot of the hoopla would have died down at that point, but they left that little balloon hanging in the air. And and to their credit, they did admit that that was a mistake. Yeah, unfortunately, the USGA doesn't do it every day, every week, like tour officials do, the PGA Tour and us out here on the LPGA Tour. So sometimes these mistakes like that get made, but in the heat of the moment, you know, it's tough because you don't want to affect a competitor while they're competing. But when they went to him on the 12th, they should have assessed the penalty at that time.
Yeah, I think we're all thankful, I suppose, that the penalty didn't keep, you know, the DJ didn't lose. And have that be the question. You think there's hoopla over what happened and he won. If he had lost, it would have been just disastrous. But, Dan, my question is, does this unfairly put groups in the, you know, lead groups that get a lot more TV time more under the spotlight than groups in the middle of the pack that don't we don't have the as much video review to go to? I mean, is it unfair to the people who happen to be on TV a lot that you can always go back and get the redo?
Your question's a good one. It is one of the injustices of professional golf, of tour golf especially, because as you play in the weekend and you play in the last couple of groups, you have more spectators, you have more marshals, you have more television, there is more scrutiny. But as the professionals themselves will say, yeah, but they're making more money too. They're the ones that are cashing the bigger checks. So with those bigger checks comes more scrutiny. It is one of the injustices of professional golf, tour golf. But they're willing to live with that because of the bigger checks that they're cashing at the end of the week.
All right, so Dan, let me ask you the question this way. You know, I totally understand, because when you look at the rule, and more specifically, when you look at the decisions around Rule 18-2, it does say that the weight of the evidence and all that. So by the letter of the rule, certainly understand the one-stroke penalty. When you look at common sense, I mean, can you realistically say, when we're sitting there watching it on TV, I'm sitting there going, yeah, he grounded the club next to the ball, he took two practice strokes, the ball still hadn't moved. He picks the putter up. He goes to put the putter behind the ball, and the ball slightly moves. You and I both know that, you know, there's probably, you know, the fact that the greens are rolling 14, maybe 15 at that point in the day. You know, the type of grass is a poana that grows quickly. So maybe one blade, you know, grew a little bit longer than the other. He sets the ball down on that. Grass in the shadow lays down. I mean, there's so many factors with the greens and the conditions of the greens that could influence that ball moving, you know, 100 times more than him being within a proximity of the ball and the ball moving. Common sense tells you he shouldn't be penalized. The letter of the law tells you he should be penalized. How do you kind of juggle those two things when making decisions?
You know, that's another good question. Let's look at the evolution of the rule of 18-2. Prior to 2012, if you had addressed your golf ball and your ball moved, you were guilty. It didn't matter if a gust of wind blew the ball. It didn't matter what moved that golf ball. You were guilty, and you got a stroke penalty, and you had to replace it. After 2012, what they tried to do is they tried to make it a little bit better by saying, okay, after you address the golf ball, you're guilty unless I could prove you're innocent. By a gust of wind, you're on a steep slope. Using some of those factors, you could get a person out of that penalty. They went another step farther in 2016 by removing Rule 18-2B, which was ball moved after address. And when they removed it, what they basically said was, okay, any time a golf ball moves, no matter where it is, even after address, let's look at all the factors, and then let's decide whether or not the player had more likely than not caused that ball to move or not. So they've been moving in the right direction. Do they have it correct yet? I don't think so. When you have two entities, the USGA and the Royal and Ancient, trying to agree on rules because they want the rules to be the same worldwide, these things move slowly. But they're moving in the right direction. I think the next step, and to your point, I think you're correct. Under the rules, he incurred a one-stroke penalty. In reality, if any of us are playing golf, I don't think we would even penalize ourselves, because we'd say, hey, look, I didn't do anything to cause that ball to move. So I think they're moving in the right direction. I think ultimately you might see if a ball moves without the player moving it physically by accident or what have you, I think you're going to see that on putting green, they probably will do away with that penalty altogether going down the road. But until they do that, we are stuck with this ambiguous kind of decision, and you have to weigh all the facts. And basically what we do when we get into a situation with a player is we just ask the player, what did you do? Show me what you did. Show me where you did it in proximity to the ball, and how long did it take for the ball to move after you did what you did. And we look at the slope, and we look at wind that day. And yeah, I mean, an animal could crawl out, a little insect can crawl out from underneath the ball and make it move. You could put it on the top of a poana head and, yeah, fall right off of that. So I think the USGA and the RNA are moving in the right direction, but you have to use the weight of evidence decision that we have to try and make the best decision that you can for the player.
All right, we're on with Dan Maselli, friend of the show, an LPGA official, talking about some of the mechanics of the DJ call and things like that. Take me back a little further, the genesis of this rule to begin with. What's the competitive advantage? I mean, what are we trying to get rid of by having this rule?
Well, the number one rule, or the rule that is so precious in golf, is to play the ball as it lies. And that being the principle behind the game. You hit it somewhere, you're supposed to play it from there. And if that ball leaves that location and goes somewhere else, if you cause that to move, then you're penalized under the rules. Some would say this is a rule that they use to catch people who want to cheat, you know, bump their ball up in the rough, make it look a little better lie in the fairway or what have you. But the basic principle behind this rule is that you play the ball as it lies, and if you cause your ball to move, you or your caddy or your partner, then you have incurred a penalty under the rules of golf. So it's basically to protect the play the ball as it lies principle.
Which is not really applicable on the green anyway, because they're able to pick it up, wipe it off, put it back down. I mean, playing it as it came to rest is not applicable on the green.
No, you're right. And you are supposed to play from the same location. You're required to replace the ball from where you lifted it. However, you're right. You are allowed to lift it, clean it, and sometimes it gets down exactly the same spot. I don't know who you guys play golf with, but I have guys who may not put it down exactly in the same spot. But that's the principle of the rule, and I think that's why they're moving in the direction they're moving with Rule 18 too, and hopefully they'll get there by 2020.
Yeah, Dan, before we let you go, I want to clarify something that we actually brought up last summer with you, is that really, what is the role of the rules official? I mean, you're there. It's supposed to be a game of integrity and character where guys are making calls on their own. What's the distinction between you seeing something as an official and stepping in, thus becoming more of a referee, and sort of intervening, or waiting for one or the other players to call you in to make a call on something they see?
There's two different types of officials. There's a rules official, and then there's a referee. A referee is appointed by the committee to walk with a group, to be in a match. Generally, it's match play. Sometimes it's stroke play. But it's a referee is appointed by the committee to be with that group. That person can intervene at any time, whenever they want, in the discussions between the players and what's going on. A rules official, which is basically my capacity most of the time, is you're managing a group of a number of groups or an area on the golf course, and you're there to handle and help the players with any situations where they don't know how to proceed. Generally, we don't intervene as an official until we see something that we can prevent. In other words, if you're watching, for instance, I was watching yesterday while we're playing golf here in Northwest Arkansas at the Walmart Championship, I watched two golf balls collide on a putting green as I was sitting watching golf. And I didn't get involved immediately. I waited. I watched the players proceed, and the players proceeded correctly. The player moved the ball back the way she was supposed to, and so I didn't get involved at all. That's the right way to handle it. You let the players proceed. Now, if they were going to, let's say they didn't see the balls collide, and they just went up and marked the positions of their balls and were going to play them from those locations, then I would have intervened, because now I'm protecting the player from incurring a penalty for playing from the wrong place. So that's when you intervene, is when you can protect the player from incurring a penalty, and I think that's good officiating.
Well, Dan, as always, we appreciate you coming on. I guess the more rules issues we have, the more fun we have talking to you.
I appreciate the time, guys. I really do. And don't be so hard on the USGA. They're doing the best they can, and I think they're moving in the right direction. And DJ won anyway, so I think it all worked out good.
There you go. All right. Thanks a lot, Dan.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
That's rules official Dan Maselli.